Hey guys, Lady Luck here. Are you going on any road trips this summer? I know I'm going to be going on a bunch of road trips. And being that I'm going to be passenger princess, I love playing on SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest has all of my favorite slot games, live blackjack, live craps. Head on over to SpinQuest right now and get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hour number two, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on this Friday. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hey, you can help us decide who you think has the best basketball jersey in our uniform drawing contest. The winner will receive an MTSU sports jersey courtesy of MTSU Athletics. You can vote at 102.5 The Game Twitter page or The Game Nashville Facebook page. Cast your vote now. We told you we would catch up with Mo Williams, longtime NBA player, played at Alabama under Mark Godfrey, and now he is the new head coach at Alabama State, his first head coaching job. And let's say hello and good morning and congratulations to him. Mo, how you doing?
How you doing?
Oh, we're doing fantastic here in Nashville. Why was this? I know you played at Alabama, and I know you know, you're back in the area where you've spent a lot of time. Why was this the right time for you to take on? I know you've been an assistant for a couple of years elsewhere, but why was this the right time to become a head coach?
Well, you know, I've been preparing for this moment, you know, for years. Even while I was still playing, the opportunity was there. And like you just said, I played at Alabama. I'm from that area. It made total sense on all parts. Just ready to get the ball rolling and run my own program.
You know, I remember that team. You had some good teams at Alabama. You played there under Mark Gottfried. In fact, I think I hate to bring this up, but I think you guys lost, if memory serves me correct, didn't you lose to Kent State? Was that Antonio Gates' Kent State team?
That was.
That's a bad way to start the interview, isn't it?
The funny thing about it is, I mean, I remember, like, yesterday, he had about 20-10 against us. And the NFL draft was probably a couple weeks after the tournament. And I had no clue that he was going to be the first tight end taken. So my joke was, my joke of the century is, man, we lost to a football player.
A Hall of Fame football player at that. He will
there
be someday. You were initially drafted by the Utah Jazz, and unfortunately, very sad news today that Jerry Sloan has passed away at age 78. I know you weren't there long, but what was your experience like in Utah with the Jazz and around Jerry Sloan?
Well, for one, I'm deeply saddened by the news. You know, Jerry, he meant a lot to me, you know, because I played for him as a rookie. And, you know, everything just coming into the NBA, just how to prepare yourself and the approach you have to have, you know, to even have longevity in this league. I think all those things was instilled in me by Jerry, just the way he, you know, ran his program, ran his team, stuff I still use today, the way he motivate, everything. He gave me an opportunity as a rookie to play out the third point guard on the roster, and, you know, sometimes he'll start me and I'll play a lot. I had some games where I had 20 and 18, just opportunity that kind of prolonged my career to where it is today. So I have a lot of admiration for Jerry. That news definitely was sad news to me. I mean, I just actually sent a tweet and, you know, Instagram post 20 minutes before this call. So that's how kind of, I just heard the news 20-30 minutes ago, so it's definitely sad news.
Mo, who were some of the other people that influenced you along the way, coaches, players, that you're going to compile all this information and make it your own, but you learn things along the way to help you in this role as a head coach? Who are some other people that influenced you?
Well, you go down the line. I've played for some amazing coaches, and everybody have their own strengths. And obviously, you understand that you take tidbits out of, you know, everything, all your experience, and kind of compile into your own kind of style and fabric of who you are. But I can go down the line. I mean, you're talking about a Mike Brown. You're talking about a Terry Stotts. You're talking about a Larry Kostowiak, a Terry Porter, a David Vanderpool, that's actually at Alabama a few years back. And, you know, obviously Mark Godfrey, Jim Herrick, just the knowledge that I have around me, just all those years of experience. You know, some people I can just pick up the phone and just have a conversation about anything basketball related and get some knowledge about it. So with that being said, you know, the experience around me is undeniable, and I definitely will use those guys as resources.
That is a pretty good list. Mo Williams on the line with us, played at Alabama, longtime NBA player, now the head coach at Alabama State. You know, during these times especially, we haven't had any live sports to talk about. It's just starting to come around a little bit. A couple of sports have emerged, but The Last Dance has gotten a lot of attention, as you can imagine, on Mondays especially, on shows around the country. Have you had a chance? Have you been watching? What do you think? Give us your take on The Last Dance.
Well, The Last Dance, it was amazing, to be honest with you. When you really look at it, you know, Jordan had this kind of airness to him, you know, in life. You know, people just really didn't know much about him. We know him and we knew everything about him, but we just didn't know him. The things where you're kind of, really? He said that? Jordan? Michael? So, you know, those, the documentary itself, now that alone, it made me feel more, he was more of a human, be honest with you. He was more one of us, and that made me appreciate him a lot more. The fact that he had to go through so much adversity to have the success he had. You know, I think about, you know, losing my dad, how I feel about my dad, and the fact that, you know, you know, he's murdered in a such a senseless act, a senseless way. And to have, with saying it's your fault, like you had something to do with your father being murdered. Now, if that happened to me and the way I feel about my father, you know, that's tough to get past sometimes. And he had to get past that. He had to get through all the adversity as far as with the team and his personal life and all these type of things. So to see how human he was and the fact that he still was able to have the mental strength to get through it and be the best player in the world and live up to those accolades. I mean, I admire him more so for that.
We're talking to Mo Williams, great basketball player at Alabama, long career in the NBA, including an NBA championship, and now the head coach at Alabama State, building a program back in his home state. So, Mo, you know, as you talked about The Last Dance, it just sort of dawns on me that anybody who's at a certain age had to and loves the game of basketball, whether you're rooted for Michael Jordan's teams or not, you were heavily influenced by him and that great group of players during that era where you still had just amazing audiences watching those games. Take yourself back to those times. You're a teenager, basically, for a lot of that. Mm-hmm. How did Michael Jordan influence you as a player?
I mean, Michael Jordan is, you know, my all-time favorite basketball player of all time. I mean, I grew up watching him. He's my era as a kid greatness, just like my kids is LeBron's. You know, they grew up in an era where LeBron is the best thing smoking to them. And when I grew up and I was their age, it was the vice, you know, same thing for me with Michael Jordan. And if you ask LeBron, he'll tell you the same thing about how Jordan impacted us as kids. It's amazing. Everybody wanted to be like Mike, you know. It was just someone, you know, that kind of set the tone that this is greatness and you want to be, he felt like God in a way. You know, and you almost felt like you couldn't be Jordan. You want to be like Jordan, so you pick a player. Like my favorite player was Gary Payton. I felt like, you know what, I could be as good as Gary Payton. I don't know about Mike. You know, he too great. You know, so that's the kind of impact Michael Jordan had on, you know, my life as a teenager, you know, growing up loving the sport and appreciating the sport, and obviously, you know, have an aspiration to actually be there one day.
You had a really interesting career path in the league. I mean, just logging as many years in the league is one thing, but your experience is pretty unique. You come in, and at one point, you're playing with a young LeBron James before Cleveland's able to win a title. You leave, and you basically come back right around the time that he comes back, and you have the breakthrough to win the championship with the Cavaliers. So first, let's take LeBron, because we're talking about Michael Jordan, and as you know, there's all kinds of comparisons going on right now between Michael and LeBron. But take the younger LeBron first. What was the most enjoyable thing about playing him in those younger years as you had that quest to try to get over the top and win a championship?
Oh, man, it was just a sense of, you know, wanting to get it done. You know, when he was young, he was chasing. You know, he had all these records he wanted to break. You know, he was striving to be in these talks that he's getting every single show that I go on, every single show that I hear is Bron and it's Jordan. And I tell people all the time, when they try to compare Michael to someone, there's nobody else's name comes up but except for LeBron. You know, obviously, Kobe is kind of a little brother Michael Jordan, but at the same time, when you talk about the greatest of all time, it's always LeBron and Mike. That's the only name comes up. And I kind of give the analogy of, okay, I say, hey, guys, you got to pick one of these two guys. You got to close your eyes. They're going to go in a circle like musical chairs, and you just point. And when we say stop, that's who you got. And I guarantee you one thing, you won't be mad with either one.
That's a good way of putting it. Mo Williams is with us. So, Mo, how tough was it to get over when LeBron first left the Cavs? Because it ends up being a great story. You guys end up being reunited, and you're part of the happy ending. But, I mean, obviously that was really tough for that city.
Well, first of all, I was, you know, 26 years old, just coming into my own, just coming off an All-Star year. I saw, you know, my life and that marriage with LeBron lasting forever. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I wasn't mature enough to handle that situation. You know, I wasn't mature enough to move on. But at the same time, you know, when you look back at it, since that year, I've made decisions for myself that wasn't popular for everybody else. It just at that time, I just didn't understand. And, you know, you live and you grow, and obviously that's what brought us back together. And, you know, if I would have knew that I was going to come back in 2016 and win a championship with him, shoot, I would have bought a plane for him to go to Miami.
Right. That's interesting. So, Mo, you know, this is needless to say, I know the answer going in, but, you know, Darren has got a lot of Cleveland ties. I've got relatives who are big Cleveland sports fans. We've all seen the 30 for 30 Believe Land and seen the heartbreak of the city. So to be a part of that team that breaks through in the fashion that you guys did it, I can't imagine what that was like, you know, when you finally got to celebrate all of that hard work that you guys had done.
Oh, man, it was amazing. It was amazing. You're talking about 1.4, 1.5, whatever that number was, million people in a block radius of downtown. Hey, it's hard to explain that, because explaining it, you really don't get the gist of how major and big and electric it was. You know, you're in the middle of the street, you're driving, and you cannot drive because there's so many people in the street, people on top of lights, people on top of buildings, people in buildings. It was mayhem, and it was amazing. It was a situation where you had 1.5 million people in one area, and nobody's mad. Everybody's happy. I guess everybody's happy. Not one person upset. And it was just a great experience.
Mo Williams is with us, Alabama State head coach and longtime NBA player. So you brought Kobe up briefly earlier. You were with the Clippers when they were winning one of the championships there with the Lakers, and obviously, you know, sharing the same town with them when they're in one of their heydays, as many heydays as they have had. But what type of interaction, if any, did you have with Kobe during that time, or at any time in point during your playing days?
Well, you know, one thing about Kobe, I can't get into, you know, a lot of personal things with him because I didn't have that personal time with him. But, you know, as a, you know, as a competitor, just being around him in those moments, he's the most player that's like MJ. You know, just the way he carries himself, the way he plays, you know, he emulated MJ. And you can tell the way he played, his competitiveness, you know, all those type of things. So I enjoyed, you know, every moment with him. Excuse me. I've enjoyed the battles I've had against him, especially when I was in Cleveland with Bron. You know, it was always a big deal when we played the Lakers with the Bron and Kobe matchup. So those games was always huge. We played them on Christmas 2 years in a row. So it's always a big deal when we play them, and we always get the best from them. I have utmost respect for him, obviously. He's going to be, you know, obviously go down as one of the greatest. And, you know, it's sad that he's not here to go through this coronavirus with us, you know, but at the same time, he left his mark.
Absolutely. And in 2014, 2015, you played in Charlotte. Jordan, of course, the owner of the Hornets. So what kind of interaction did you have with Mike, the owner, during your time there?
People laugh at me when I say it. I was like, MJ was the owner, but he was kind of like one of us. You know, he would just come in the locker room, sit in the training room with us. He joking with us, like similar to how he was joking on The Last Dance. Like, that's what we saw, that guy. And the world just actually saw it on The Last Dance, but he'll come in and joke with us. You have a bad game, he'll come in and tell you wasn't worth a doggone tonight, in other words. But, you know, he's a player's owner. You know, like people say a player's coach, I think he's a player's owner.
Mo, as we started this off, of course, talking about your new job, you're the head coach at Alabama State, what's the biggest challenge that you're looking forward to as a first-time head coach when you finally are able to get started?
Well, the biggest challenge, for one, is just setting the culture, setting the foundation. That's the biggest challenge. I think you got to get that right the first time, and I think if you get it right the first time, That obviously just kind of sets your foundation and your culture to move forward.
Are you going to challenge your players to wear a headband? Because when I think of Mo Williams, I think of the headband. I really do.
Well, I'm not going to fight it if they put a headband on.
You know, what would be cool as we wrap this up, Mo, you got Jerry Stackhouse, who we had on the program a couple of days ago, who's Vanderbilt's coach. You know, so you could maybe get Vanderbilt on the schedule. You guys need to play each other. You got Anthony Hardaway here in the state. Penny's coaching Memphis. That'd be a nice match. I mean, you got some, you know, you got some NBA players. You got Juwan Howard up in Michigan. I mean, I'm thinking maybe that should be on the schedule at some point.
You got a network down here.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, hey, thanks for coming on and doing this. We really appreciate it. Best of luck, and we'll certainly check in with you down the road. Thanks for doing this. Continue to be safe.
Thank you, guys.
All right, that is Mo Williams. He is Alabama State's new basketball coach, his first opportunity as head coach, and that was a lot of fun with him. You've heard us talk about Free Business Friday. This is our fourth installment of Free Business Friday. Don't forget Philip Forsberg at the bottom of the hour here on Darren Donick and Chase. We've had a really good time talking to people who own or manage small businesses that are safely back open, want to get the word out about what they're doing, and today is no different. Craig Carpenter is on the line with us, and he's with Digital World's Virtual Reality Arcade, which is located in Cool Springs. Craig, how you doing?
Doing really good.
Tell me about your business. This this has me intrigued, and I have to believe there's a lot of people out there listening right now that hear, oh, virtual reality arcade, their ears perked up as well. So tell us about it.
Yeah, so VR, it's definitely one of those, you know, it's not an easy thing to describe. We show videos when you come into the arcade, and you can see people playing it, like, right there live in front of you. And even then, it doesn't quite convey just how, like, immersive it is. When you actually go into the headset, that's what really gives you that idea of just, you know, what, how different it is to see it when you're in the headset, but also how it makes you feel. We have a lot of sports titles at the arcade, things that let you do football, things that let you do racing games, flight simulators, and we'll get folks in there. We had one guy doing one of our racing sims. He fell over while in the chair because he started doing barrel rolls in it, and he just started leaning because in his mind, you know, he saw that movement, so his body was reacting to that movement, and it's just quite an immersive thing you just have to experience.
The times that we're in, and because racing has been doing their iRacing, and I mean, VR, that's become a big deal in these times. So how much has that helped bring awareness to what you guys are doing over there? And, you know, how much more interest do you see? Because I feel like more people are playing, you know, playing video games in these times.
Oh, yeah. I mean, COVID, it put everybody, you know, we had to social distance. And so everybody's been trying to find something that they can do where they can still interact with people, but, yeah, keep that social distancing. At the arcade, we actually have each one of our stations is 100 square foot. So when you're in one station with friends, with family members and coworkers, you're already naturally distanced away, you know, 10 feet from the person next to you. So it gives people that opportunity to come in and be doing, you know, interactive kind of gaming with each other. In something that, and because they're, you know, still locked in, we can't travel, but in VR, you can jump in and, you know, do something like Google Earth, where you fly around the world kind of like Superman and can go to, you know, go to all these kind of places. You can still jump in and, yeah, do some of those, Formula One racing. Yeah, they've been having all their racers have been doing live streams, not necessarily in VR, but they've been doing just live streams in general, you know, to keep in that spirit, to still be able to do the things that they love and keep that social distancing.
Tell people where you're located in Cool Springs.
So we're located at 1945 Mallory Lane, and we're right back behind the Verizon store that's directly there on Mallory Lane. And if you drive on by during the night, just keep an eye out for the blue lights. You will definitely see us from there.
Love it. Craig, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Sure thing. Thanks a bunch.
Craig Carpenter with Digital World VR Arcade there in Cool Springs. Now let's talk to Peter Demas. Demas's Restaurant. If you've been in Nashville for more than 5 minutes here in Middle Tennessee, you should be fully aware of Demas's Restaurant. Peter, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you today?
Doing fantastic. I know as we complete phases, and it's depending on what part of Middle Tennessee you're in here in Rutherford County, I know down in Murfreesboro, things, the restaurant business has been back open. People have been able to dine in, and I know that's all starting to happen all over Middle Tennessee. So for people who don't know about Demas's Restaurant, tell everybody about your locations and what you guys are about.
Well, yeah, so we got locations in Murfreesboro and Lebanon and Hendersonville where the dining rooms are open in all those locations. And then it's a full-service restaurant. You know, servers are now wearing masks and all the tables are 6 feet apart, and we're sanitizing on a regular basis. And then we also have another concept with two restaurants called PDK, which is a fast casual southern restaurant. And we have one in Mount Juliet and one in Bellevue. And so if you're in those areas on that 40 corridor, then you can easily pop in there and get some good southern food. And again, same type of stuff, people wearing masks, and we're just trying to keep everybody safe and healthy.
Peter, do you still have the liquid sugar?
We actually can't do the liquid sugar now because it's a shared condiment. But what we've done is we now add the liquid sugar to the tea. And so now Okay. Our sweet tea is perfectly sweet because we use the liquid sugar that we make in the back, and then we just Okay. Add it to the tea for you. But, yeah, we can't share it anymore. It's one of those things that we've done in order to help keep people safe.
Well, that's smart, but it is fantastic. Their tea, just for someone who loves sweet tea, let me tell you, it's worth going just for that. But certainly the food is outstanding as well. I'm glad you guys are safely back open and we can get the word out. Peter, thanks for joining me.
Well, thank you for doing this for everybody.
All right, Peter Demas. Demas's restaurants, you just heard the locations. Go check them out. They are safely back open, and you can dine in. We will come back. Don't forget Philip Forsberg at the bottom of the hour here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We know a lot of you are working from home. You can stream 102.5 The Game from anywhere. You can download the Game Nashville app. That's certainly a very good and easy option and free. Enable Alexa Skill or Google Home and ask it to play 102.5 The Game. Or you can live stream from our website, thegamenashville.com. All really good options. And today, especially, no matter where in the world you're listening, you need to be listening now, because in just a moment we'll have Philip Forsberg, and at the top of the hour, that will start the final 2 hours of our program, which will be Game 6 Remastered, a trip down memory lane, which was 3 years ago today when the Predators eliminated the Ducks in Game 6 at Bridgestone Arena. Yes, that was on May 22nd, 2017. And, guys, we have not heard, at least Willie and I can't speak for Chase. I know you've been doing some work behind the scenes. I don't know if you've heard the final product or not. I have heard a segment, and as I've said on the show and as I've said to Ryan Porth, if the 2 hours or anything like the first segment, this is must listen to. Have you heard the whole final version or just the first segment like Willie and I? Okay, I don't hear anybody.
Well, I've heard what you've heard, Darren. I thought you were asking Chase. He's got better access, maybe, than we do. But I've only heard the sneak peek and then the clip that Ryan played this morning. So I'm anxious to hear it myself.
I have access, but I have been selective in what I've actually listened to. Ryan has asked me to listen to some things to kind of help him out, but I want to hear it like everybody else.
Okay. Yeah. I honestly, if I was in that spot, I didn't want to hear more than a segment. I really want to hear all of this with everybody else coming up at noon. And with that being said, let's bring in Predators forward to Philip Forsberg. He indeed is on the line with us. Phil, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Oh, we're doing fantastic. What have you been doing with your time away from the ice, as we've all been spending a lot of time at home? How's quarantine been for Philip Forsberg?
I mean, it's been challenging, but it's I guess it's been as good as it could have been. I would say it's been me and Erin have been just hanging out here, and been going driving down to Georgia to her parents, and been spending some time with them too. And yeah, while in the meantime, yes, staying safe and trying to maintain it, just those two places, which has been good. So
okay, you just brought up your girlfriend. The video that we have seen on the basketball court, be honest, was that one take? How many takes was that? That was fantastic.
Yeah, thank you. I didn't do a whole lot. It was I just had a supporting act, I guess.
No, but you had to give her the perfect bounce.
That was high skill on
actually,
both ends.
Phil,
though,
you got to give yourself credit, really, man. Good. Both were great. You had to be working together to make that work.
Yeah, no, it was. I guess that's it was definitely a teamwork, but it took a couple of tries. We had something a little more advanced with a couple more elements involved to start, but we realized fairly quick that was not going to play out. So we went to this one once we decided on this one, it was only, I think, 4 or 5 tries. So it wasn't too much into it, but yeah, it was fun.
Oh, that was fantastic, man. I was giving you the claps on that one. That was really fun to watch. I watched it multiple times before I was finally done with it. We're kind of taking a stroll down memory lane. I don't know how aware you are of what we're doing coming up at noon. Game 6 Remastered, we're going to do a deep dive into your all's elimination of the Ducks. This is the 3-year anniversary today of you guys punching your ticket in the Stanley Cup Final. But before we talk about that series, let's just kind of get your mindset. Let me start with the series against Chicago. You guys are literally the last team to punch your ticket into the Stanley Cup playoffs. So you go in as the 8 seed. You're going up against the big bad Blackhawks, who have won 3 cups in the last 6 years. Even though they're not the defending cup champs going into that series, they're still the 1 seed in the Western Conference, and they've done a whole lot of winning What was the mindset at the time as you guys were heading into that series?
I mean, we were confident, I would say. I think, obviously, we knew, we saw everybody, all the so-called experts called us, there would be, yeah, four or five games for Chicago. That's what most people said. And obviously, that put a little extra fire under us. But also, like, I felt like we're going into that series. We had played them, obviously, a bunch throughout the years, and we knew exactly what they would bring. We knew that they would be skilled and fast and try to play it that way. And we matched our lineup perfectly, like, credit to the management. They made some changes, and those changes really paid off. And I think that was basically the system going through the whole playoffs. Like, we ended up beating them, obviously, and moved on and played St. Louis, which is a big, big, heavy team. And then we switched up again. We'd throw guys like McLeod and Fiddler in, and those guys were phenomenal, too. So I think that was the biggest thing for our team that year, that we were so deep. And, yeah, so, like, we could play any type of game, really.
You guys scored, Victor Arvidsson scored the lone goal in game one against the Blackhawks early on in the first period, and that's all it took. Pekka pitched the shutout. You guys skate away with a 1-0 victory in the United Center and take the series lead. And just like what you were talking about with the predictions with all the national media, no one, there was like a handful that picked you guys to actually win the series. Everybody else, like you said, was picking the Blackhawks pretty easy. But the same holds true, Phil, for game two. Like, everybody's saying, okay, the Predators did what they needed to do in Chicago. They got a game, and now everybody basically had the series tied at one going back to Nashville. But obviously you guys had a different plan.
Yeah, like, first game, like you said, was a tight game. Pex probably stole that one for us. I thought we played okay, but Chicago was way better. But Pex played unbelievable. And then in the second game, I think that was a little bit of a statement game for our team. I think, I don't know, I can't remember. I think it was 4 or 5-0, something like that. But we played phenomenal. Like, that was just, I think that's kind of when all of us realized also, because like I said, the first game could have easily went the other way if Pex didn't play as good as he did. And then people, that game up with the same effort, and the whole team just played way better also, which, yeah, in the score, I can't remember exactly the game, but I felt like it was supposed to be, like, maybe not 5-0, but it was a clear win for us.
Yeah.
And a hard-earned win in the way, like, we played great. We had guys like Harry Solinchuk came in and scored a goal, if I don't remember wrong. And it was just, like I said, the same four-line mindset that we had for the end of the regular season, and just carrying through the playoffs.
Yeah, it was the Harry Z goal early in the second period. I punched the person next to me in their arm and said, oh, my gosh, the Predators are going to win this. They're absolutely going to win. And then you guys just kind of took off after that goal and, as you said, skated away with the 5-0 victory. I said at the beginning or earlier in the show that I was going to ask you what this feeling was like. So now we have to fast forward all the way to the moment that we're going to really do the deep dive in game six, coming up at noon. It was Colton Sissons who, of course, had the hat trick to give you guys the lead with 6 minutes to go. Still a one-goal game with the playoff lives of Anaheim on the line. You can never feel good. But when you had the empty netter with just over 2 minutes to go, I guess it was about 2.5 minutes to go, that's when everybody could exhale, at least in the stands, whether it was a fan or the media. That's when you knew it was over and kind of the party was on. But you're a player. You're on the ice. What is it like after your empty netter and everybody around you, the place is going crazy, knows that you're going to the Stanley Cup Final, but what's the mindset for a player? What was the mindset for you when your goal went in, your empty netter went in?
I mean, I just flipped it. Like, it was kind of like I flipped it from, our own hash mark. Basically, I just had a second to get my head up and just try to flip it out. And, yeah, I guess that was just the way it was going to go. You know, like, you look at that puck, 9 times out of 10, that just keeps rolling and into the, yeah, like, to the boards and icing. But that one just took a bounce and went in the net. And, I mean, you can tell, like, you stand there and you watch it and everybody's just watching. It's like you said, it's like, feels like it's slow motion, but then once you like the puck, just it was just pure joy. It's like you said, like at that point it was still time left, but at that point it was done. Like you could see, like you could see them too. Like they knew it was done. Everything was just it was over by that point.
Talking to Philip Forsberg, Nashville Predators, as we count down to our Game 6 remastered. So Phil, those last couple minutes, it was really interesting. It was a little bit of a buildup, right? There was a couple stoppages. I think the Ducks wanted to mix it up a little bit. I think somebody got a misconduct here or there. But finally, when the horn sounds and everybody's celebrating, I'll always remember the guys coming out on the ice, even the injured guys, right? Ryan Johansson's limping out there in the street clothes. Mike Fisher's in a suit, you know, just trying to get in that huge team photo with everybody on the ice with all with those brand new hats right out of the box, Western Conference championships. What do you remember about that, just taking it all in with your team at center ice with nobody wanting to leave?
It was awesome. I mean, it's like for like everything that we went through, like it was obviously, it was great. It was so cool. And especially with, like, you see all the other teams, like you get those hats and like it seems silly in a way that, but it's like once you're out there, it's awesome. I remember just trying to get snatch a second one for my dad, because I know how much he loves those kind of things. So I just tried to get two and I was happy I was able to do that. And no, it was great. And then, like, obviously that whole night, it's a weird feeling because, like, I've made it, like, playing World Juniors and stuff like that, and you know you haven't won anything by making it to the final. But you also, like, in this case, like, obviously this is the biggest stage, so there was incredible, like, happiness and enjoyment from everybody. It was phenomenal. And just, like you said, with the whole building being around it, too, it was great.
As you think about what may be coming here, and I know it's been reported that, you know, the players are all right now in the process of deciding on a few things about this format, but it seems to me, Phil, from what we can see, is, you know, it somebody has a chance here to make another improbable run. When you think about, everybody's going to start over, everybody's going to be fresh, and, you know, step by step, you know, there could be another unlikely type of run, and I'm wondering how much somebody like you and some of the guys who were on that team in 2017, I think it's fair to say you guys have a lot more talent now than you did back then. I mean, why not an opportunity to make another run like that?
Yeah, there's no reason at all. That's the mindset, you know, like it's always been the mindset, and it's been challenging times, but you also look at it and, you know, like it's more open than ever before. Like, obviously, like you said, guys come back, like teams that had injuries get guys back. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens. You know, like we still don't know for sure if it comes back or not. But I think for me personally, the mindset has always been just to stay ready, basically. And now, like, the closer, I guess, it goes up and down, as I'm sure it goes for you guys. One day it feels like it's happening, one day it feels like it doesn't. But at least, like you said, if this agreement comes through, then we know at least what the format would be like. And still, there's a long way to go to get everything back to playing. But the mindset from everybody is, yeah, it's that we were in it. Like, as you said, it's going to be a great, great chance for everybody, and especially for our team with the kind of talent that we do have.
You were saying, you know, you've had some really funny videos, like everybody's, you know, finding things to do, and obviously you're spending your time in a different way, but you mentioned stay ready, right? That there's that mental sharpness that you want, that edge that you want to keep. So what's that been like during this time? How creative have you been with workouts and things like that to try to keep your body and your mind ready for this next challenge if and when you get the green light?
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's been the challenging part, especially me living in an apartment here in Nashville. It's the space is limited. Obviously the building has closed down, all the amenities and stuff like that. So I've been basically doing a lot of one-leg squats with some dumbbells in my kitchen. So guess that's what we've been doing. But it's just, like you said, we're fortunate enough to go down to Georgia there, where Aaron's parents has a big property where I can run and do a bunch of different things there. So it's, like I said, it's just been trying to get creative and just try to mix it up and try to stay on top of it.
Philip Forsberg is with us on Darren, Donick, and Chase. So Philip, one thing that I've been doing during this time, is because I've had extra time, is I've gone through and tried to clean up some of my old files that I've had in my computer. And I stumbled across some video that I took of your very first practice here in Nashville. You looked like you were probably 12 years old, but your first time here in Nashville. Take me back to that. What was that like? What was going through your head? They had the press conference, and, you know, obviously the trade had happened to bring you here. But you know, I think you played five games or something that year. But What was going through your mind that first time at Bridgestone Arena for your very first practice?
It was. I mean, I was just happy. Like it was an awesome experience. I've had a great year back home. Just being able to extend the season by playing in the NHL and fulfilling every hockey kid's dream to play in the NHL was phenomenal. And you get out there and you see the players that you've been watching, like Shea Weber and Pekka, and guys that you then grew up getting to know and play with. At that point, you just were, yeah, like you said, felt like a 12-year-old kid too, fulfilling my dream. It was great.
I've heard, we've for years heard Barry Trotz say that all roads to Nashville go through Milwaukee, and you did start here in the NHL, but then did have some time with the Admirals and able to hone your skills and get used to the North American ice. And I know that everybody wants to immediately jump into the NHL, but how beneficial was that time for you to kind of work your way back up?
It was good time. Like you said, I thought I shouldn't have been there, but you had a great team. We had a lot of good guys. Like, you get to grow up and play with these guys. Like, I play with Sis and Waddy and Tony Boteto and Saul Salamaki. And there's so many guys that have gone the same way. Like I said, we had a really fun team at a time. Basically, everybody in the same kind of age. And so I thought, obviously, hockey was more of a challenging period than I would, like, obviously, it would have liked. But just getting to know all the guys and getting to know the lifestyle and playing style over here was definitely a great year in that regard.
One thing that's cool about sports in general, but you know, it seems like in this town with the Titans and Nashville SC and then you guys is seeing some of you all get to mix and mingle. But George Kittle lives here in Nashville, and I know that you and George have gotten to be buddies. So how were you able to meet? How did that come about?
So that was through Aaron and his wife Claire. So they've been longtime friends, and I guess that's how we. So once I started getting to know Aaron more and more, we ended up seeing, we went and hung out with George and Claire, and we clicked right away. He's obviously a funny guy, and basically the way he's obviously a little different on the field that you guys see than he is, but he still has a very, very big personality, and he's a great guy, and we've got to know him more and more over the last year or so. And he spent his off season here in Nashville. So normally we do, his wife and a bunch of people came to a bunch of games before season shut down, kind of after their Super Bowl run. And it's been great. Just getting to know him and Claire and his parents too. They're all great people. So,
have you started the recruiting process yet? Because I know he's got a little bit of time before his contract's up, but have you started that? Hey, you should come to Nashville, or you should be in Nashville all the time and play for the Titans because it's such a great city.
Yeah, I mean, it would be phenomenal. But I went out there and watched a game at their stadium out there in San Fran, and it's a pretty good setup there too. So I wish, obviously, it would be great, but I don't think he could be in a better spot for him personally. So,
Phil, let's wrap it up with this. Who was anybody here from your side of the family for Game 6 back 3 years ago today? Who was anybody in the stands?
Yeah, I had my mom and dad. They were here.
And what did that mean to you to have them in the stands to experience this with you?
It was great. It's like I said, the first thought was to get a hat from my dad. They've been there through everything, and just being able to share that moment with them here, and it was phenomenal. I can't remember exactly when they got there, but I think they watched the last probably all games in that third round, and then they went back for a week and came back for the finals and watched all the home games here in finals too. So it was a great time, and unfortunately it didn't end the way we would like, but like you said, hopefully we have a chance.
We, by the way, we said the other day, if we kind of played the what if games were in different places, I brought up, what if game one of the Stanley Cup final was in Nashville and not in Pittsburgh? And of course, I was talking about the controversial call. Would that have really happened?
I mean, you never know. It's easy looking back, but that's where the season could be too.
Yeah. Well, I hope you're back out on the ice sooner rather than later. Thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it. Continue to be safe, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Sounds great. Take care, guys.
All right, that is Philip Forsberg, and really good stuff from him. We'll come back and get you ready for Game 6 Remastered. We'll set things up to close up shop for us on our end. We'll do that on the other side. ESPN 102.5 The Game. Really cool hour. Mo Williams kicked things off. Alabama State new head basketball coach, longtime NBA player, won a championship with the Cavs, initially drafted by the Utah Jazz, played for Jerry Sloan. The unfortunate news that Jerry Sloan has passed away at age 78. He was battling Parkinson's disease and dementia, and you just heard Philip Forsberg. Really good conversation with him. By the way, if you heard us reference that video with him and his girlfriend, I believe it was on a basketball court. That's right. If you haven't seen it, it's fantastic. Go look for it. It's out there. And I guess it was pretty – what we learned is they had even some more really cool tricks up their sleeve, but maybe the level of difficulty was maybe a bit too much.
Well, he undersold his part of it. Number one, his girlfriend, Erin Alvey, who's a great singer, by the way. You should check out some of her music. But she rides the unicycle around the court.
Which I couldn't
and
do.
And I think this is at her,
does any,
her
is any, can any of us ride a unicycle? Like, I can't. No,
absolutely not. I've never even tried.
Come on, you know the answer to that with me.
Yeah, I'm not even going to. Actually, I should say, Willie, can you ride? Because Chase, there's no reason.
I can ride a bike.
I've never even attempted. So she's wheeling around on this thing, and he is juggling the soccer ball. Now, you know, we've all witnessed at one time or another the group soccer game that goes on before every hockey game.
Yes, really, I've gotten every hit hockey by a soccer team. Ball a couple times.
Oh, sure. But Philip he's got some really good skills. He loves soccer, as we know. And so he can handle a soccer ball, but he's got big-time skill. He is passing the ball back and forth to Erin as she's riding along in the unicycle. She's catching it, throwing it back to him, but he's not catching it with his hands. He's handling it, you know, soccer style, and then kicking it back to her. So they make a couple of passes, and then he kicks it off the backboard, perfect timing where she grabs it off the backboard and slams it in, you know, without wrecking the unicycle. So if you haven't seen that clip, I mean, it's a wow.
Chase, it would take you 5 days to ride a unicycle, do your 5K on a unicycle. It would take you at least 5 days to complete. Fair?
No, it wouldn't, because I wouldn't complete it because I'd break something.
Yeah.
I would fall off and I would break something.
That would be bad.
You know, look, we've had this conversation. I know what I'm good at and I know what I'm not good at. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I don't think any of us are good at the unicycle. I know it would probably be a disaster for me, too.
Yeah, and I don't have a desire to learn because I know that, you know, I wouldn't be good at it. I'm too big. I'm too uncoordinated. So it just, why even try?
Yeah, that was really good though, Philip Forsberg.
Yeah, it was fun. It was good to catch up with him.
Yeah, some interesting things that came out of that. That's what's been fun is you kind of do the deeper dive and get the player's perspective. It's amazing kind of what you learn about that run and what it was like kind of getting into their mindset, right? And that was interesting to hear him say, you know, when I asked him about his empty netter, which did it, the fans felt it, we felt it, you know, what was the mindset of the players? And it was interesting to hear him say they knew at that point the Ducks knew it was over. You know, we always talk about the slumping, you know, you could see when the team kind of, that right. Clearly he could sense right then that Ducks went, yep, okay, guys, series over. It was fun. We tried, but it's over. And that was with 2.5 minutes to go, by the way. All right, with all that being said, be safe this weekend. Enjoy your Memorial Day weekend. Remember what Memorial Day is about on Monday. So stop, reflect, think about what it means on Monday. But this is where we set you up for Game 6 Remastered. This is going to be 2 hours. of Radio Gold. And we hope you sit back, relax, enjoy. Have a great weekend. By the way, Chase will be sitting in for Jared today. So it'll be Chase and the GM. Ryan Porth will also join them the first hour. They'll kind of have a post-game hour reaction to Game 6 remastered. So that'll be kind of the 2 o'clock hour. Here it is. Enjoy it on the other side. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.
Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.